Aho me atma sammoho.
Aho me atma sammoho.
Yenatma yoshitam kita.
Yenatma yoshitam kita.
Kridam rigas chakravati. Naradevasikam manhi. Aho me atma sammoho. Yenatma yoshitam krita. Vidam rigas chakravati. Naradevasikam manhi. Aho, alas, me, my, atma, of myself, samaha, total bewilderment, yena, by which, atma, my body, yoshitam, of women, kritaha, became, Krida mrigaha, toy animal, Chakravati, mighty emperor, Naradeva, of kings, Shikamani, the crown jewel. Translation: alas, although I am supposed to be a mighty emperor, the crown jewel of all kings on this earth. Just see how my bewilderment has rendered me a toy animal in the hands of women. Purport. Since the king's body had become fully engaged in satisfying the superficial desires of women, his body was now like a toy animal in their hands. Read the verse again. Aho me atma samoha yenatma yoshitam kita kidam rigas chakravati naradeva sikamani. Alas, although I am supposed to be a mighty emperor, the crown jewel of all kings of this earth, just see how my bewilderment has rendered me a toy animal in the hands of women. So, here we see that Pururava. Very powerful personality, very powerful king, emperor of the world. And finally, after many, many, many years of being bewildered, he finally comes to his senses that although he was thinking himself, due to pride, thinking himself a very, very powerful personality, actually his position when he actually developed some actual sense of his real position, he saw that he wasn't such a powerful person, but was literally the just the play toy, or we can call him a toy boy in the hands of a woman. So now, of course, here when we say women, for man, they become bewildered, wanting to enjoy sense gratification with women, and of course, women have the exact same sense of wanting to enjoy sense gratification with men. So for women, man is woman also. As soon as it's in the sense that there are two terms, prakriti and purush, the actual purush or the actual enjoyer is the Supreme Lord, and his various energies are the enjoyed or the prakriti, but in this world everyone wants to be the purush or the enjoyer. So both the men want to be the enjoyer and the women want to be the enjoyer. They want to be the purush and enjoy the enjoyable. The material energy is the prakriti. So both the men and women want to enjoy the prakriti, the material energy. Actually their position is, so, and people very proudly think that yes, I am so mighty that and so important that I can control the material energy for my enjoyment, and that, you know, the material energy, because I am so important, the material energy is for my enjoyment. So it's a false sense of proprietorship. It's a false sense of how much control one has. It's a false sense of one's position as being the enjoyer. It's a state of total bewilderment that exists both for men and for women in the material world. The actual fact, of course, that Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita in the 5th chapter, in the last verse, Bhakta, Bhaktaram Yogatapasam, Bhakta, that he is the Bhakta, he is the enjoyer, and one who understands that becomes peaceful. The one who tries to compete with the Supreme Lord can never be peaceful. Just like we see sometimes a smaller country may want to compete with a much more powerful country. So we have, terrorism and, you know, so many things, or, you know, a smaller nation or a nation of smaller wealth or somehow or another, but to compete with someone who is, for the time being anyway, more powerful, then that country or that nation or that person can never have peace. Therefore we see there's no peace in the world. So here, this verse applies equally for men and women, the same. It's not being discriminatory, it's the very nature of the world. So King Pururava, he is totally bewildered. Bewilderment, of course, is a state of ignorance. And therefore, we see that in the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna lists many different aspects of knowledge, and the first principle of knowledge is humility. The first principle of knowledge, as soon as there is some actual advancement in knowledge, one's false pride should diminish. And proportionately as knowledge increases, one's false pride will diminish completely, to the point where one is very meek and humble. So as long as a person is very proud, that means they have not developed knowledge. Here King Pururava, he is thinking that he is the almighty powerful controller, but actually his position was completely different. He was a very insignificant plaything in the hands of one woman. But he is thinking that he is a very, very powerful controller. So that is the nature of the material energy, that it makes us all think like that, that we become so bewildered that we have no concept of our actual position. Even if our position is extremely embarrassing, And therefore we see that the state of the world today, of course, just like people become such embarrassing. There was one minister in West Australia, so very, very powerful, personality, practically ruling, to some degree in Western Australia, in his portfolio, but they had some hidden cameras, and there was a female office employer, and of course when she went out of the room, like a dog, he was smelling the chair. Just for sexual gratification that she was sitting on. So although thinking very, very proudly that I am a great, very powerful, aristocratic, highly intelligent, highly qualified personality, his actual position was that no less than a dog. Now, strangely enough, even after he was discovered and it was plastered all over the television, he still felt qualified to hold office, and did hold office for quite a considerable time, still thinking that, yes, no, I am a very qualified minister and I am qualified to rule over so many people. But his position was actually quite embarrassing. Everyone except himself. Although the whole of Australia, in fact all over the world, were considering that this person is very low in their activities, he was still considering that, no, I am a great minister, great, powerful politician. Gradually that embarrassing situation began to dawn on him, and he ultimately resigned. But it shows the nature of the material energy, how powerful the material energy is. Practically everyone in the material world lives in a state of complete bewilderment. Everyone in the material world. And they're all very, very proud and have no concept of the embarrassing situation in which we've all found ourselves in the material world. Just like, you see dogs on the street, and one big dog is bigger than another dog and can bark louder, and therefore that dog is controlling a certain part of the street. No other dogs will dare come, and he's thinking, yes, I am the biggest, meanest dog. But, that living entity, who in some form of life may have been an Indra, is actually in a very pitiable, condition. Just like children, children, everyone loves the antics of children, they try to stand up and fall over and hurt themselves, and they'll cry, and they have no coordination, they cannot do anything, they're completely dependent. So everyone is very enamored, but they forget the fact that there is a spirit soul in there who has full knowledge, full capabilities, but has been reduced to the position of just being almost on the platform of an animal, just like a little child. If you banged an adult on the head with a hammer, and then after that they got a bit of brain damage, and then every time they were eating they were drooling, and they couldn't feed themselves, and they couldn't clean themselves after they'd gone to the toilet, you would think, that poor, pitiable person has been reduced to such a horrible condition. But when we see it in the baby, the same spirit soul, but with, how beautiful. But it's not beautiful, it's actually quite, you know, alarming that the spirit soul, the living entity, can find themselves in such a state of complete ignorance without any concept of what's going on around them. So, and of course, as the children grow, they become very proud for any little thing. So they take one little step and they're looking around, where's mum and dad, you know, look at me, you know. And everyone's get the cameras out, like this, work it baby, like this, and they're taking their steps, you know. So, you know, in this way, the whole world exists in a complete state of bewilderment. Their knowledge is just completely covered up. But each and every one of those living entities is feeling somewhat proud, content with their achievements. And we see, especially in the human form of life, how, and especially in the age of Kali, everything is so degraded. In Kali Yuga, people barely know how to clean themselves. Actually, the animals, many animals clean themselves better than humans in Kali Yuga. That's a fact. You know, going back in history, you know, there are many nations that didn't have baths. You know, it's just a bit of perfume and what have you. You know, they didn't bath very often. So they put a bit of French perfume. But, you know, there were just... even now, you know, the so-called modern civilization, people's habits are very, very unclean, very unclean. In fact, Prabhupada said in the future, apart from everything else that this movement has to offer, this movement will become famous for just one thing, and that is cleanliness. Because it will be so rare in Kali Yuga, the people have no idea of cleanliness, and then they will see the Hare Krishna movement, and it will be just, you know, just that one thing will just be make the Hare Krishna movement so famous throughout the world. So people are very, very degraded. The Maya is very, very strong, and that's the point here, of course, is that Durga Devi, she is the superintendent of the prison house, and she has two potencies. One potency is that she can imprison, capture the living entity and place them into a particular, you know, material body, some embarrassing situation somewhere in the material world, and her other potency is that they become completely covered over and bewildered by that situation. So she is very powerful. No one can actually escape that. Except, of course, the devotees of the Lord. So, even as devotees, you know, therefore Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that, you know, by bhakti alone can one know me. In the Bhagavad Gita, in the 18th chapter, Lord Sri Krishna says that only by devotional service can you know me as I am. He cannot be understood. One cannot get out of the state of ignorance by one's own prowess. But one can only know the Lord by bhakti, which means that if somehow one pleases the Lord, that the Lord himself will release that conditioned soul from the clutches of his agent, Durga Devi Maya. So by bhakti, one may think that I will conquer over my situation and rise to perfection by cultivation of knowledge. And Krishna says, no. Not that process, you'll never understand me. One may think I will become a great yogi, very powerful, so powerful that I can manipulate the material energy according to my desire. Still, although those powers are there, Maya does not give them release from the material energy. They still must remain in the material world until there is some bhakti by which they please the Supreme Lord. And by pious activities, one may think, I will perform pious activities, I will give so much charity to the poor, and in this way I will become a great personality. So, you know, this is very popular conception these days, that people consider that we worship God by worshipping the downtrodden masses of people. If people are poor, if people are, you know, uneducated, if people are somehow suffering or ill, then by opening hospitals, giving charity, giving food, giving education, that is our service to God. But the underlying principle there is that it's the same sense of false ego, that I am very great, I am a great personality, and I will become greater and more perfect and conquer over, rise above all obstacles by being so powerful and giving charity and looking after the poor people like this. So the in India they turn that Dirijan Narayan, that God is represented in the poor people. But if the Supreme Lord himself appears to them and says, I am greater than you, they do not like to acknowledge that, and therefore they will give him nothing. So the Supreme Lord appears, I am the Lord, I am the actual friend of all living entities, not you, and you should actually give to me, because what you have is actually mine. I am the proprietor of everything. I am the supreme enjoyer. I am the supreme proprietor. Everything you have is actually mine. You better get that back. And even if you have no charitable disposition, give something to God. But they will not give to God. They consider that maintaining their false prestige. No, I am the great charity giver. So therefore you see that in previous ages, in many countries in the world, they considered that to give to God was proper, and therefore they built great temples, great mosques, and great churches all over the world. Nowadays, people that consider to be not very profitable. And it's not profitable to just build a big church or a big temple. You're just giving to God, and there's no real profit in it. Better don't give to God. Don't build big buildings for Him. Let us build big charity houses, and we can give to the poor in business and in industry and what have you. And of course, there is a lot of political gain in giving to the poor, just like and religious gain, just like previously, many religions, in order to convert people. If people were very, in a very difficult situation, they would supply them bread and food, And then I say, now you become a Christian, now you become like this, and yes, like this. And then, you know, Prabhupada says, the communists, so then they try to retaliate, that they would drive in with big truckloads of bread and say, you pray to God, did you get the bread? No. We have a whole truckload of bread for your village. So who is better, the communists or God? Oh, yes, the communists. So they will become communists. See? So, you know, charity has a way of manipulating the politics of the world. And, of course, under the guise of religion, it appears to be service to God. But it's actually maintaining their own false prestige as great, you know, enjoyers and controllers of the material world. But actually, when it comes to God, they're very miserly, and they cannot see any profit. They cannot see any profit that, you know, I can work from 9 to 5, and I can gradually, you know, over the course of so many months and years, I can amass this huge wealth. But if I go to the temple and sweep the floor, wash the pots, do some cooking, it's cutting down my wealth. There's no profit in that, you know. So, but I'll give a little charity to, you know, because I am such a great personality. So, actually, you know, charity in the material world is, especially in Kali Yuga, is really another form of looking after one's personal self-interest. You'll see that certain nations, in some part of the world, thousands and thousands of people will starve to death over the course of years, and no one will give charity. Because politically and religiously, there is no profit in those people, and they will just let them die. But some other people, where you can get big headlines and get a lot of political, you know, push and, you know, push on your religion, what have you. Ah, yes, and they'll advertise, yes, we are very charitable. We don't mind if these people die. Let's not put them on the news. Or, you know, they'll put for 3 seconds on the news. Ah, yes, in this country, you know, 400,000 people have starved to death. And now the cricket. It is. And then they'll do, you know, a 10-minute story how the fire brigade saved the little kitten, you know, from, you know, fell down into the little manhole. You know. So charity in the age of Kali is, you know, very deceptive. In the guise, you know, actually, many atheists, we see in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, you know, describing the demoniac mentality, you know, I am the Lord of all I survey and I will give so much charity. You know, demoniac persons, they have, you know, they give charity as well, but it's all based upon their sense gratification. But when it comes to giving to Krishna, they cannot even give a little flower. No. So, but Krishna says, therefore he says, that, you know, only by bhakti though, only if you become charitably disposed towards the Supreme Lord, then I will reveal myself and release you from the clutches of the material energy. You must come to that platform of bhakti. You know, there's one story of there was one sannyasi who was travelling to someone's house. And that sannyasi asked the lady, you know, to beg alms. Now, when sannyasis or traveling mendicants travel, they give transcendental knowledge and give the opportunity to associate with the householders for their spiritual benefit. That's the only reason they go there. Otherwise, you know, there are fruits fallen from the trees, and you know, there's so many. They can eat quite quite easily. They don't necessarily have to go to the households, but it's a system where those in a renounced order, they go to the householders, they give them an association, and the householders being very grateful for that association, of course they'll give some charity to the sannyasis. But sometimes householders become very proud of their position. That, I am nicely situated, and really I don't need anything from your religion or your knowledge or what have you. I am nicely situated. I've built up a big bank balance. I have a nice house, nice family. Everything is going. I really don't need. So there's one lady. She inquired from her husband, and then it was decided. Yes. So she came to this, the husband said, yes, give him some ashes. So she went to the sannyasi with some ashes. Yes, here is your charity. And the sannyasi said, yes, you give ashes, but as long as your charity has begun, I am happy. As long as you have even developed the slightest trace of charity within your heart, then I am happy. So that's Krishna's mood when he says, Patram Pushpam Palam Tayam. You give me a leaf, a flower, a fruit or water, anything, and I will accept it. Because it's for your benefit. You are such a miser. we have taken what we can of the Lord's property, and then we keep it for ourselves, and without any gratitude, without any thanks. And then if he asks that it be utilized in the way it was intended for our benefit, so that we don't suffer reactions under material energy, we say, no, we cannot give. But Krishna, he knows that if we just begin our charitable disposition to the Supreme Lord, even we give a flower, a fruit, or anything, then he will accept that because we benefit. Just like a child, there's no profit for the Lord whatever we give him. Just like a child, the parents teach the child that although a small child, whatever they have, it's actually the property of the parents. So, for instance, the children may have sometimes there's a birthday party, and they cut up the cake and they distribute amongst the children. The adult sit on the side just watching. But then, the adult may say to the child, the little child, can I have a little bit of your cake? So sometimes the child will give a little bit, or sometimes, no, like this. Yeah, of course, the adults can go and cook their own cake anytime they want. They go buy one. They don't really need that cake, but what they want to see is that child learns to give and appreciate. So, Krishna's mood is like that. Just, you give anything because I want you to learn to love the Supreme Lord and all living entities again. And that charitable, open disposition within the heart, your heart is like a rock. You squeeze it, you cannot get anything out of it. So, now if that child gives that piece of cake to the parent, the parent's not thinking, there's so much profit I've made. This week, my profit at the factory was a little down, but now I have a little piece of cake on top of that. So, now I have just my profit, and if I get a little piece off every child in this room, gradually I am really gaining. I'll have an extra handful of cake plus my work, my profit from the factories. In this way, I'll become it. But the adult's not thinking like that at all. There's no question of profit. It's just, teaching the children to be charitable. And people think like that of Krishna, that somehow, if we give to Krishna, then somehow Krishna is profiting from us. Yeah. They have, and this is where, you know, because they're so proud and they have no knowledge, they're thinking, you know, I am the proprietor of so much wealth here in the material world, and God wants to profit from me. And, you know, I am in such a position that I can refuse. I don't know who you think you are, God, but if you think you're going to profit from me, you better go elsewhere. You know, you know, I am a very successful person. I do not need God. Perhaps you go to the people who dropped out of school, or, you know, the people who couldn't, you know, get a good job. You know, people somehow or another, you know, very unfortunate in this world. You go to them, profit from them. But you will not profit from me. So people are very, very foolish, very proud. But actually, you know, what is Krishna's profit? Just like we have built this temple here. Well, we didn't build it, but someone did. Well, we bought it and paid for it, maintained it. So much work, you know, this temple here. And, you know, so, as I guess in some temples, not here of course, in some temples, you know, a temple president may become very proud. Look at my big temple. You know, it's interesting, when Srila Prabhupada was in Mayapur, he was speaking on this, you know, they were building the Mayapur temple, and he was speaking on this point that, you know, such a big temple rising up, but actually, you know, where are all the bricks coming from? Where are all the ingredients coming from? They're all coming from Krishna. This is actually his temple. It's his property. He is arranging for the materials. He is supplying the workers. He is inspiring us with the intelligence to do this activity. It's all his, and it's all going on by his grace. There is nothing to be proud of. And then he described that, you know, if Krishna wants, he can manifest 16,108 palaces or more, just like he did in Dwarka. He had 16,108 queens, and he immediately was able to manifest palaces, you know, temples, palaces that we cannot even imagine. And of course we can understand that Krishna has unlimited universes. So, you know, so many temples of the Lord in this universe, and so many palaces, and then in each and every universe, wherever the Lord goes, he has his temples and palaces. But we may become proud that, I have, you know, done this in this temple. You know, I am, you know, I'm doing all the gardens, or I am doing this, or I am doing that. In this way, we become very proud. Just like, you know, we may offer some service to Krishna, and we may become very proud of that service. We may do something very nicely, make a garland, lead a kirtan, give a class, you know, write something, you know, do some preaching, you know, do some big festival. And the tendency is that, you know, we can, it's very easy to become, or, you know, become a guru, become a temple president, become a GVC, become a, you know, big manager, you know, big devotee, famous devotee, give big seminars, big retreat. We can do so many things. It's very easy to become proud, thinking, yes, look at the massive service. Krishna just must be in awe and reverence of what I'm doing for him. He's just, you know, I've probably made him fall over backwards. He's just scratching his head. How did that little Ganga do that? But we sometimes forget, of course, that Krishna is in the spiritual world, And he has unlimited gopis, each, you know, so expert. I don't know if you've ever read the Sri Krishna, Sri Radhakrishna Ganadesha Deepika by Srila Rupa Goswami. Hmm? You read that? This? It's got in there sections about the flowers. You read that? They're making flowers. It describes all the different flowers that the gopis make for Krishna. You know, there's flower earrings and, you know, there's flower bangles and, you know, describes them, you know, flowers. From top to bottom, they make them for Krishna. So you imagine all the wonderful jewelry and decoration and that. All, you know, an exact science made from different flowers. You know, the combination of the scents of the flowers, the colours, you know, how they're tied, the type of flowers, everything just down to, you know. So we sort of, you know, offer Krishna some garlands with some flowers that don't have any scents and, you know, and a few colours and what have you like that, or, you know, whatever we do, you know, we cook something in the kitchen and we, you know, very easy for us to become proud that, you know, of the service. But we actually, that pride means that we have completely forgotten the glories of Krishna, our position and Krishna's position. Krishna's position is unlimited. Therefore, the Goswamis of Vrindavan described that they were always meek and humble. How were they meek and humble? How did they always remain meek and humble? They were always enchanted by remembering the transcendental qualities of the Lord. So when you remember the Supreme Lord, you remember your own position. And when you remember your own position, it's very easy, it's very natural to be meek and humble. We just, you know, if we just meditate on Krishna, or even meditating upon Krishna's great devotees. We see, you know, what the acharyas have done. Today is the is it appearance or disappearance of Narottam Das Thakur? Appearance? I'm not sure which one. We're celebrating the life, anyway, of Narottam Das Thakur. Such a great Vaishnava, you know. Again, what to speak of Krishna? Krishna has unlimited servants. And if we just take one of Krishna's unlimited servants, it makes us very, very meek and humble to realize our service. Narottam Das Thakur, he was so much loved by Lord Chaitanya. You know, we're seeking the love of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He was so much loved by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that before his birth, it was sort of right towards the end of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left Jagannath Puri and he was going to Vrindavan. And when he got to the Padma River, it was in Bengal, looking across to the village of Ketari, I think it's called. And he started calling out the name, Narottam, Narottam. And tears were flowing from his eyes, and he was walking up and down in ecstasy. And Lord Nityananda knew who he was talking about, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had said before, you know, one day this great Vaishnava, Narottam Das Thakur, would appear. So he wouldn't meet with Narottam Das Thakur, he decided that he would leave his love, his prema, his love and devotion for Narottam Das Thakur, his internal spiritual pleasure potency, in the Padma River. So he got into, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu got into the river and bathed in the river, and that prema, you know, exuding from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, caused the river to flood over, and he left that prema there. And when Narottam Das Thakur was a little older, and he was there, Lord Nityananda appeared to him in a dream and said, you bathe in this river at this spot, as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has left his love there for you. And Narottam Das Thakur bathed in that river and immediately began to manifest the symptoms of pure love of God. It's said that actually his naturally darkish complexion immediately turned golden from that point on. So Narottam Das Thakur, of course, he was not born in a Brahmana family, and many considered him a Sudra. So there are many proud personalities who would not take association with Narottam Das Thakur, considering, even though he was the recipient of the full mercy of the Lord, they considered, no, I am, in their pride, I am a great Brahmana, I am, a very exalted personality, I am very, you're born in a lower family, and therefore, you cannot possibly ever be in a superior position to me, and therefore I cannot associate with you, I cannot take spiritual knowledge for you, and in fact if I hear you're giving spiritual knowledge to anyone else, I will condemn that very, and try and have you, thrown out of town. So there was a great movement against Narottam Das Thakur, considering him to be, because those Brahmanas who had bhakti, and therefore because of their bhakti, Krishna allowed them to make full spiritual progress. Even though they were Brahmanas, they took initiation from Narottam Das Thakur as their spiritual master. So in those days, it was absolutely unheard of. And some very, very famous and very elevated Brahmanas took initiation. So this caused a lot of disturbance. But of course, Narottam Das Thakur and his followers, they just pushed on. They weren't particularly concerned. But Narottam Das Thakur, he actually eventually went to Vrindavan, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had told him that he should take, in a dream, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared to him in a dream, told him, you should go to Vrindavan and take the shelter of Lokanath Das Goswami. And so therefore he went to Vrindavan, and he asked Lokanath Das Goswami for initiation. Now, Lokanath Das Goswami, although he's a very, very elevated Vaishnava, an associate of the exalted devotees in Vrindavan, and coming in the line of he was a very dear friend to Krishna Das Kaviraj, the writer of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami was a disciple of Raghunath Das Goswami, so he was coming in the line of the six Goswamis. So Lokanath Das Goswami, he considered that I do not know that I am able to serve the Lord at all. The Lord is so glorious, he is so wonderful, he is so merciful, he is so exalted, and although I spend all my time trying to serve him, actually I don't think any of that service is worthy of service. And therefore, because I do not know how to serve the Lord, how can I become your guru and give you initiation and teach you how to serve the Lord when I cannot do it myself? That is. So, Narottam Das Thakur, I think 1 year later, he asked again. For some time, Narottam Das Thakur would sort of hide at night. Yeah, he would associate with during the day, but at night time, he would sort of hide in the bushes, and where Lokanath Goswami may have, passed urine or stool like that, Narottam Das would come out of the bushes, and clean up that place and sprinkle, water. So, when Lokanath got up in the morning, everything, was all pristine and pure like this. So this went on for a long, long time. And then one time, probably about a year, And one time, Lokanath Das Goswami thought, you know, who is doing this? Who is doing this? So he stayed awake, you know. There's Narottam, you know. Like this. But still he wouldn't give initiation. Then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who had actually previously ordered him, when Narottam Das the call comes, you give him initiation. And but he was so, felt him so fallen that, you know, he didn't feel qualified. But then the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared to him again. I thought I'd asked you to give him an initiation. He said, alright, I will accept one disciple, no more, like this. So he initiated Narottam Das Thakur, and you know, he revealed to him that in the spiritual world, his eternal identity is as Champak Manjari, or sometimes also called Vilas Manjari, and he is a servant of the gopis headed by Champakalata, you know, one of the eight principal associates, or you know, shakis associated with Srimati Radharani, and that he had a, you know, particular service to in relationship with through Champakalata and towards Lord Sri Krishna. So he had a very, very exalted personality, as was his spiritual master. But although, you know, he is one of the Manjaris, his identity in the spiritual world is, you know, he is a Nitya Siddha devotee, you know, he always acted with great humility. Because you know, you see that he served his spiritual master just as a menial servant. He was never thinking, oh yes, because even before he met his spiritual master, he was recognized for his, you know, exalted devotion, his exalted learning in Vaishnava tradition, and his kirtans. His kirtans are still legendary today. In fact, Narottam Das Thakur, you know, made popular a particular form of kirtan which came down from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu through Srip Damodar Goswami, then there was someone else, and then gradually through Narottam Das Thakur. And he was, you know, very, very wonderful kirtan, just you know, to practically to be in one of his kirtans, you know, one could immediately come to the platform of, you know, prema bhakti, just the ecstasy. His kirtans were very serene and majestic. That is the style, very serene and majestic, gradually building, gradually glorifying Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and then gradually working into the glorification of Sri Sri Radha Krishna, you know, step by step, the mood progressively, and very serene and majestic, but ecstatic kirtans. So actually, Narottam Das Thakur, he and Shyamananda Prabhu and Srinivas Acharya, they inaugurated the first Gaupaneem festival. It was on a massive scale. You know, we go to Gaupaneem every year, or some devotees do, or we celebrate it every year. And that Gaupaneem festival was originally begun by Narottam Das Thakur, one or two associates, and they invited the Vaishnavas, all the great Vaishnavas from all over, including Janava Mata was still there as well. Yeah, Janava Mata. And they invited all the Vaishnavas, and they built for the festival, they built halls, they built, you know, accommodation for all the Vaishnavas. Every single Vaishnava that came, they personally greeted them with gifts and garlands, and when they left, they personally, you know, saw to the, each of them, you know, with more gifts and, you know, and clothing and, you know, and like that, and looked after them and fed them. Massive big and you know, it went on for a few days, huge feast like this. So And they used to, he was also the first book distributor, because they took the books that were compiled by the Goswamis, and they, for the first time, they took those books of the Goswamis and they took them throughout India and then established the teachings of the Goswamis, which were previously only established in Vrindavan, and they established them all over India. So, you know, the first original book distributors. And so many, and they defeated, you know, gradually in the course of Narottam Das, the cause, pastimes, you know, the great wave of antagonism from the proud people of this world, thinking that they're very elevated, was, you know, very wonderfully dismantled, because they just, you know, and then many of those who were very much against Narottam Das Thakur eventually became his followers or disciples, and he became very, very popular. So he, you know, if it wasn't for Narottam Das Thakur, Westerners today could not practice Krishna consciousness. And so, you know, he was very, very, you know, his glories were just so outstanding that even the most, you know, proud Brahmana community happily admitted feet. Yes, you know, you are, you know, this wonderful servant of the Supreme Lord. Your transcendental qualities are just beyond our imagination. Like this, we give in. We are defeated. Like this, you know, your qualities, your kirtan, your knowledge, your devotion, you know, everything like this. So sometimes we meditate even upon one of the Vaishnavas, and it helps us to, you know, become a little humble. And then we remember that Krishna has unlimited servants, you know, throughout the material world and in the spiritual world. Then in that way, then we think of our own service. Even though we're trying to do it very nicely, we might be satisfied, you know, when we certainly do things in a better way. But we should never ever become a proud Vaishnava, because as soon as we become proud, that means we're already in the grip of Maya. And being in the grip of Maya, we can waste many, many years totally bewildered, creating offences to Vaishnavas, offences to the Supreme Lord, engaged in all sorts of sense gratification, with no understanding how to really please the Supreme Lord. So therefore Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Chnadapi sinichna tadoliv sahishna manina manadina kiritanya sada hari. That one should chant the holy name of the Lord in a humble state of mind, thinking oneself low on the straw in the street. One should be more tolerant than a tree, devoid of all sense of false prestige. And in such a state of mind, one can chant the holy name of the Lord constantly. And one who becomes proud, immediately they lose their ability to chant and serve. So, any comments or questions? We've gone over time a bit. Thank you. Hare Krishna.